Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas. Open Minds Radio is your UFO news authority, presenting evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello, and welcome to Open Minds Radio, your UFO news authority. This is Alejandro, and we have another great show today. In fact, we've got Michael Horn on because, of course, we talked about Billy Meier a couple weeks ago. And even since then, I've looked into some more, and there's some fishy stuff there, people. I'm sorry, but it's kind of weird. And so we wanted to bring Michael on. Michael wanted to come on and talk about that. In fact, he sent us some pictures and stuff. So if you're not watching on the Ustream right now and you're listening to the podcast, you'll want to go check out the YouTube video that we'll post in a couple days, or go to our Ustream and check that out. Just look for Open Minds. And you'll see for yourself some of these pictures that we're going to be referring throughout the show that Michael gave us. And honestly, unfortunately, you'll hear how we feel, but I feel the pictures that he sent us kind of made the case against the Billy Meier stuff, because it was really weird stuff. But we'll be talking about that. However, it's a long talk, that discussion that Michael and I had, and so we're going to go straight to the news. Jason McClellan, tell us what's going on.
Greetings, Alejandro, and hello, everyone. This is your Open Minds UFO News Brief for Monday, October 3rd, 2011. Alejandro, I feel like David Letterman. We have a top 10. Isn't that cool?
Oh, great.
I don't think we've ever had a top 10.
No, this is our first top 10.
Yeah, we might have had a top 10, but here is a top 10. Life Science published an infographic last week on their website showing the top 10 states for UFO sightings. The National UFO Reporting Center's data was used to create the infographic, and the data represents sightings from 1994 to 2011. Guess what the number one is, Alejandro?
Illinois.
It's
California.
It is California. Number two, you want to try?
Texas.
That's number three. You're close. The top three are California, Washington, and Texas. And our wonderful state of Arizona is lucky number seven.
Yeah, nice. Well, these are based off of New Fork, too, and they don't receive these days as many as MUFON does.
That is correct. This is National UFO Reporting Center's data, which was an interesting choice for Life Science to use, but I think it was more of an uninformed decision to use that data, I think. But
well, and, you know, they just go to the web and they find who's getting UFO reports. There's been lots of stories, especially on the East Coast, about Peter Davenport. And so I think they find him and get a hold of him, and he always answers the phone. So they get their data, so they send us some data, and bada boom, bada bing.
Nicely put.
That's how it works. Been in the business for a while.
Yeah. So the top 10, I was kind of shocked. And then when I read where they got the data from, I could understand a little more. But, yeah, MUFON does focus more on actually tracking that data and mapping it out. And you did a great job of that while you were there.
While I was here, when I came here, had time to put the data together. So
yes. And aren't you still working on that?
I need to do that again, and I'll do that again soon. But to see what I had put together, you can go to our website, openminds.tv, and just look for hotspots, and you'll be able to see, based off of years, I mean all the years that MUFON's been collecting its data, what the hotspots were. And I found similar stuff, California, Arizona, Colorado, actually, which they didn't have. But
that's what surprised me the most. The omittance of Colorado.
It seems to be mostly based around population, but one thing I did is based it off of, found out what the percentages were per people.
Right.
So you can see where are there more sightings than per person than other places, and that was interesting. Arizona and Colorado were two of the tops on that.
And interestingly, you've lived in both places.
Dun, dun, dun.
I think there's a conspiracy around that.
Could be.
Could be. Well, in other news, Alejandro, and I haven't heard anybody talk about this really, but the International UFO Museum and Research Center in Roswell, New Mexico, recently debuted a redesigned website. The new website makes it easier for visitors to read about the history of the museum and the history of the Roswell UFO incident that occurred in 1947. The website also contains information about plans for the construction of the brand new multi-million-dollar facility that will house the museum. The website explains, the new larger museum will offer new displays, a futuristic building, plus lots of motorhome and tour bus parking. The museum is a major part of the City of Roswell's UFO Festival that takes place every year, and the new website also contains information about that. You can check out the newly improved website at www.roswellufomuseum.com.
And I can say this now because I was being nice and I didn't say it before. They used to have one of the worst sites in UFO, in the whole UFO online webscape. It was so terrible. It was all over the place. But this website is now one of the best out there. It is so nice. I mean, I was surprised. It was just gorgeous. It looks like a lot of thought and money and time is put into it. It's an incredible website they have now.
You are certainly right about their old website. You know, it was a difficult site to go to.
Yeah.
And I was really shocked when you mentioned to me that they redid their website. It kind of was a surprise going there and seeing this.
Yeah, it was a pleasant surprise. And I went there just, I can't remember why, but it was just, it was not that I knew that they changed the website. I just went there doing some research or something, and I discovered this great website. I was shocked, and it's really cool. So everybody has to go check it out.
Good job, Roswell UFO Museum.
Way to go, Roswell.
A little bit of Hollywood news here. Kiefer Sutherland believes that extraterrestrial life exists in the universe, and that's exciting to me because Kiefer's one of my favorite actors.
Really?
I was a big 24 fan.
Mm. I was a big, my favorite with him is probably Lost Boys.
I thought you were going to say Young Guns.
No, I was thinking of Young Guns for some reason the other day, but Young Guns was kind of cheesy for me. Lost Boys I loved.
Well, according to Bang Showbiz, Sutherland believes it would be, quote, very arrogant to believe this is the only planet that could sustain some kind of life. He further stated, quote, when I look up at the sky on a clear night and see the wash of stars and planets and everything that is outside our universe, I have to believe there is life everywhere. And I know a lot of people are going to kind of poo-poo this statement and say it's just being blown up from nothing. This is the kind of nothing response that we hear from a lot of people, you know, that, oh, there has to be something out there, and people criticize that response. But I like that response, especially when it comes from somebody in the spotlight, because even a statement like that is kind of a big deal for them. I mean, we have the ridicule factor that everybody faces, but celebrities seem to suffer even more so. And when a celebrity comes out and, you know, will face that ridicule and say, hey, I'm confident there's something out there, it's more of a big deal than I think many people will give it credit.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, I really, when they're asked that question, usually this is their answer.
Right.
Especially lately. It's been, there's got to be something out there. But it's better than, you know, making fun of people or something.
Right. It's better than just laughing right away at that. Because these people who act in even loosely related movies, you know, talking about extraterrestrials or UFOs or anything space-related, this question frequently gets asked to these actors in press conferences.
And what was the movie again?
I forget what this movie is.
Oh, okay.
I don't even remember if the interview was related to it. It's something that the articles that mention this referenced because it's about an asteroid coming to Earth and big doomsday type thing. But you know, the question gets asked to these people who act in these movies more and more lately. And we're seeing this response a lot, or related responses a lot, people saying, I absolutely think that there's something out there. And while that isn't a very committal answer, it's not anything, you know, that we might want to hear like, oh, yeah, I've seen aliens, I've seen UFOs, whatever. At least it's a statement that's not laughing, and, you know, it shows that they do think about the subject, and they're not trying to make light of it.
Yep.
Excellent, Kiefer. Alejandro, this is something that you wrote about recently, and I think we touched on it last week, but the White House launched a new section on their website called We the People that allows people to post petitions about matters they want the White House to address. If a petition obtains a certain number of signatures within a given period of time, the White House says that they will review the issue and make an official response. Well, political activist Stephen Bassett of the Paradigm Research Group posted a petition on September 22nd, which asked the president to, quote, formally acknowledge an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. And 5 days later, the petition reached the 5,000 signature mark. And I think as of today, it was close to 7,000 signatures.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, I checked it out. It's interesting. I think that the wording, personally, I think it's going a little far. Acknowledge extraterrestrial presence. I asked, of course, Steve Bassett if he thought the president knew about an extraterrestrial presence. Steve Bassett said if he doesn't, he can easily find out. But as I wrote in my story, Bill Clinton seemed to really try to find out and didn't get anywhere. And what's interesting is that, you know, people think, well, he's just covering up. Bill Clinton might have known more than he implies. But he says, I tried to find out and I'm embarrassed about it, like even in this video that we have. And that, but he goes on to say that I wouldn't be the first president who has been lied to or secrets have been kept from career bureaucrats. So there could be some dark secrets out there. Why would he even add that? If he was in the know and he wanted to cover that up, why not just say, oh, I'm sorry, I was being goofy and I looked into it and I didn't find anything.
Right.
And just stop there. But instead, he always, and he's done this before, alludes to possibly that maybe people do know and they just didn't tell me.
And I was surprised to see that, well, I guess I wasn't that surprised, but I wasn't expecting to see other extraterrestrial-related petitions on the White House website
as
well.
But there's a few more?
Yes. But this one certainly had the most signatures.
Yeah.
So that's kind of exciting.
It was the first one up, too.
Yep. And, again, I doubt they'll address this, if at all. And when they do, I'm sure it'll be a joke.
But. Well, yeah, they do have to make some response. And Lee Spiegel is writing a story on the Huffington Post.
Correct.
Where he talked to the White House. So they may... we'll have to see what they say. That's going to get posted any minute now. So I'm real excited to see that. So we'll have to see what this White House rep told him. I'm guessing they're just going to say something like the Air Force looked into it. They didn't find anything.
Right.
Thank you. Bye.
Or they'll pull a Symington and joke about it.
Yeah, maybe.
Like with the Phoenix Lights.
It's very possible.
Well, Alejandro, I would love to talk news all night, but I've got to cut it short because we have an extended interview tonight, very exciting interview with Michael Horn.
Mm-hmm.
So I will leave it at that. Remember to check out these stories and more at openminds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. I'm Jason McClellan, your Open Minds news correspondent, and you've been briefed. And if you are listening on Blog Talk or on a podcast, I do strongly recommend, as Alejandro suggested, to either watch on the Ustream tonight or check out the archive on YouTube tomorrow or any time after the show to watch so you can see the visuals that accompany this interview, because I think the visuals are important, especially for this show. So you can check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/openmindsTV. Back to you, Alejandro.
All right. Yeah, what? Thank you for doing that and letting them know. We only have a few seconds before we need to get that interview going. But just to tell you a couple of things that are on the website, Michael Schratt, of course, who works here and he's really into airplanes and black projects and stuff, he took a look at Billy Meyer's pictures and he was a little skeptical. And we posted something online about that. He also likes to illustrate UFO cases because he's looked into thousands, which he talks about in that story. But we've got some illustrations that he did on some stories also. And then last week I told you about the RAND Corporation and UFOs and some stories Antonio wrote on that. Well, we've got part two on that, and you're going to want to check out part two because it's great. It goes into detail about a research document that RAND Corporation did on UFOs. So very cool. And I'm speaking fast because we got to get Michael Horn on the line. So let's go ahead and talk to Michael Horn about Billy Meyer. I am happy to have on the show Michael Horn because, of course, as you all know, we talked about Billy Meyer a couple of weeks ago, and some of that, what we talked about, got back to Michael. So we definitely want to give him a chance to clarify or let us know more about those things. And I, of course, have a lot of questions for Michael. So welcome, Mr. Horn.
Well, thank you, Alejandro. Thanks very much. I'm glad to be on with you.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm just maybe a little bit hoarse, so if
okay.
You need to tell me to – I don't mean I'm a pony. I mean I'm just a little in the throat, a little hoarse.
Right.
So, you feel free to prod me here, so to speak, to speak louder if you need me to.
Okay, great. Will do. And I have a feeling you're definitely an energetic person, that your energy will kick in and that you will be plenty loud enough for us.
All right.
All right, so first, I have just a list of clarifications, things to go over. Of course, these are some of the more tougher points that have been brought up over the years, but I think it's important because you, of course, are very adamant
and to put it lightly, about the importance of the Meyer case and that people, groups like MUFON, need to be paying more attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
However, and really in the past when we've talked, I have been someone who has, I would say, I've always really wanted to believe in the Meyer case, and I think it caused me to maybe overlook some things, and so maybe it's good for us to talk about these things that now that I'm clear on, I can see why people would be hesitant about this case, and I think it's fair that they are. And let's go over some of that. So let's start with, on the top of my list, you had sent me some pictures of models, and they're very well taken to where they look real. You know, I was showing my colleague here, and he looked at him. He said, wow, that looks like an old picture and from the 50s or something. And it wasn't. These were models. So I wasn't sure what point you were trying to make. Was the point you were trying to make that anything can be faked or replicated?
Yes. You know, when I had the same reaction when I came upon, I was just searching stuff online, and those fantastic photos came up, and I thought I was looking at photos from, you know, my childhood period. And then the more I got into it, I realized this guy has made these most amazing models. And there's things to be said about model making. Models can be made of anything. And actually, the fact that it took the skeptics so long to get people to make models of Meyer's UFOs tells us something, and maybe people will want to think that through. But let me say this about the models. When you have somebody such as that model maker who can devote or dedicate the amount of time that he did to studying so precisely and, you know, reproducing in great detail the cars, the homes, you know, all the scenarios, and your audience will see all that, that means that he had something to work from, and he had the time to do it. Now, we know that Meyer has been taking photos of UFOs not since 1975, my friends, but since 1964. And you may want to cover that at a different point in this, but it's very, very important because, you know, however we do this in responding to models, when people talk about, well, Meyer made models and he strung them up with fishing line, and then you've got people running around doing these Rube Goldberg type of fishing line installations between trees and suspending models. Didn't anybody ever really look into the research in this case and find out a few things, such as Meyer was observed regularly by all the nice, nosy people in Switzerland? They were interviewed by the investigators, both in the original investigation and by Gary Kinder. They were asked, did you see him carrying anything? What was he doing? You know, to set up the kind of model rigs takes time. You're going to run fishing line. There's no record that Meyer was a fisherman and that he ever purchased fishing line or any of that kind of stuff. The devil is in the details. So the other part, if you want to look at models, people say, well, we've taken these household items like plates and pots and pans, and we've well, did they bother to find out what were the plates and pots and pans in Meyer's place? Did they bear any resemblance to that? Was there a workspace in which he could work to make up to one dozen different models? And now you're going back, as I said, to 1964 in the middle of nowhere in India, where he photographs Ascot's ship, the alleged ship of Ascot, which is a totally different type than the other craft, plus up to eight of the light objects in these 1964 photographs. So I'm going to stop long enough for you to get on this. When people talk about models, they really don't understand the established realities of Meyer's situation.
Now, first, I'll say that out of the case, no doubt, I think one of the most impressive pieces of evidence, and one that I personally feel is legitimate, is the 1964 India photographs. I mean, those are different than the rest. There were witnesses. In fact, I can never remember exactly her name. I know I have it here.
It's Pobal Cheng.
Exactly.
Cheng.
So mm-hmm. Who's a diplomat now?
Yes, she was. She's a retired diplomat. She'd been at the UN for something like a dozen years for Cambodia. And I should add something here just in case, because, you know, time flies when we're having fun. But when we made our film, The Silent Revolution of Truth, Pobol Cheng, her video piece that was included, and Billy Myers were analyzed by a man who was a expert consultant, an expert consultant to the U.S. Army Special Forces. He consults in body language. Now, why would that be important? Because Special Forces, and of course all other soldiers, have to be able to make immediate determinations about a person's state that they observe. Is that person trustworthy, deceptive, devious, a threat to me? We're talking now instantaneous assessments that take place, split second, that this man teaches the finest military. He right. had the opportunity to sit and watch Myers' video, and of course Pobol Cheng. We turned the sound off. Mm-hmm. Even though Meyer was speaking in German, I didn't want him to possibly be called. He didn't know who Billy Meyer was, and we didn't explain it to him until after we were done. And we said, we want your assessment on these two people. So the sound is off, you know, and he's watching, and it's in our film. And he says, basically, it's a thumbs up to these people. They're honest. They're telling uh-huh. the truth as they know it. So when you go back to India and you know, when you're talking about that amazing photograph there that you've got of the cross in the sky, this was taken on a 1940s Kodak Bellows type camera. Meyer is sitting in the foreground. Somebody else took the picture. And that cross in the sky was projected holographically in 1964. I have been up with my nose to that photo. That photo that you see in there is at the very end of our film. We stood in Meyer's office with his opened personal book. This isn't even stuff that they show to the public. And there was that photograph, and we lingered on it because it's amazing. And it's,
I don't have the same reaction to that picture. I think that picture is silly. It looks like a couple pieces of tape were taped onto the film when it was developed. I mean, the edges even look like tape. I don't have a great copy.
Yeah, I understand, but you have to understand, this was 64 Kodak. Meyer developing all of his UFO photos at as much as you can get, local labs. This is not tape. How does he take tape and put it on a photograph developed in the lab? As I said, my nose and my partner on this, who's, you know, a filmmaker, we looked at that. That's a photograph where that object, whatever we may think it is in the photograph. But let's leave that for people to, you know, respectfully question
yeah.
or disagree about.
Let's leave that one. And I got to, when we get into getting back to the models and stuff, from the 60s, you know, these India pictures are different. But then they move in to the 70s. And as time goes on, they really get kind of more, and people have a hard time with it, they get a little more convoluted. They don't look as real. They look more like models. And then we get these stories that from Meyer himself, that he did have models, that he did make models at one point.
And they took photographs of them, and they were terrible. And this was something that was shown to the investigators. But let me go to your point about this, about the photos and how they look. First of all, we do have to understand, this is a man who took over 1,200 photos of the four of these objects. And again, go back to this point. How did he, as a one-armed man with no place that's ever been discovered, effectively craft at least 7 or 8 different types of so-called models, metallic, and multiple ones, and suspend them at angles, and all of this undetected by anybody? Now,
but he lived in a forest by himself, and he didn't have a job, right?
No, not at all. He lived, there were two places. He's currently living in one that I think they took over in maybe 78 or 9. But he lived in basically two buildings. And the one that he's been in the longest is a farmhouse that he took over that at the time had no, in some places, no floor, had no running water, electricity. And here he was, sometime working as a night watchman, renovating this place basically by himself with sometimes a little bit of help, raising 3 kids and doing all this with one hand, going on the contacts, photographing and filming the objects, coming back and transcribing it up to and over 100 words per minute what now totals over 26,000 pages of information. This is pretty nifty stuff for a farmer. But let's go to this thing of being alone. He was anything but alone. I've been to Switzerland a dozen times. I'll be there a 13th time fairly soon. Now, look, these areas where he lived, they're not forests. He went to different forests and meadows, open fields, mountains to photograph, but he had to traverse different people's properties almost every time. And in some cases, even in the contact reports, he says to, you know, Semyazi or somebody, you know, that was very unfair of you to make me go to that one location. I have to go through four different closed fences and get off my moped. So here's a one-armed guy riding and sometimes 20, 30 kilometers in all weather to remote areas on a moped with one hand. Are we really going to have him dancing around now stringing fishing line for what? You know, I mean, this is where things get very bizarre. But let's come back to an essential point, and one that I'm going to hold you guys to.
Mm-hmm.
There were originals and first-generation prints examined and analyzed in this case, contrary to what's been said, my friends. And you can know that because you guys at Open Minds actually own Wendell Stevens' collection. And I've sent you some screen captures of some of the places where they speak about the originals being analyzed and about them traveling with originals on trains and the strange security that they suddenly got unasked for by the CIA and other people. And then where there is a, you know, a complete photo analysis document that is free on my website that people can look at.
This Marcel was done with, one?
Oh my goodness, at the time, that's the medals. No. There's a whole photo analysis document, and I think you'll be able to put that up soon to show it. And this was very discreet. They outlined every piece of equipment, every kind of computer analysis, all of the work done on edge enhancements and analyzing pixelization and thermography, even Marcel Vogel's idea to illuminate one of the photos or negs, I'm trying to remember, I sent you a capture on that, with red light and then tested using infrared, and they could find an energy signature between the UFO and a Swiss Mirage jet that was sent up. They had 11 photos of that encounter with a Swiss Mirage jet, and they had the sound recordings. Now, so we don't lose a sense of perspective, you and I know that we could do probably 3 hours here easily. And I will say to you now, because, you know, I have questions for you, I don't know if I'll get to them, but can you think of one other so-called UFO case where you have so much to go through, where it's been analyzed, it's been examined,
the problem is that when you go through this analysis, and I've seen Wendell's stuff, and even himself, he's not consistent in what he says, what generation was what. I mean, he mostly said he never touched anything except for 2 to 6 generation pictures.
Nope.
He never had these
right
original
there.
Ones.
You're going to find it in those documents where he says originals and first generation. And
but that's what I'm getting at, is there these inconsistencies. And not only that, most of these labs – I think that's one of the issues, is that it hasn't been, for instance, you know, with something that's going to be taken as scientific evidence, first of all, it has to be analyzed by multiple labs. And typically, if ever, are they able to say, they can say it's something that is a solid object that is a certain distance away from the camera, but that's about all they can say. They can't necessarily say it's not a hoax.
Here's what they can tell you. It is either a small object close to the camera or a large object a distance from the camera. It either has some thermographic signatures. We can either find out that there is haze around it so that there is a lack of distinct edges that is consistent with a larger object at a distance from the camera. This is why if you take let's say, Phil Langdon's photographs. And I have encouraged Phil for over 2 years. I have the email record. I've been in touch with this guy, encouraging him to take his best shot. And every photo of his, if you look, they're lovely. They're clear as can be. The ones that are supposed to be at a distance are still too clear. When you really know what you're looking at, and I'm not a photographic expert, but I've read Wendell's report, and that's not a Mickey Mouse report. Go through that electrodensitometric analysis of edge. I mean,
well, people
this wasn't
make that
done
same
by somebody
argument
said,
with
well,
the wedding cake ones, that they're too clear, that they're too in focus, that they and people point that out as evidence, including people who claim themselves to be photographic experts, of it being, you know, the too close to the camera.
No, what happened was in the two clear ones on Meyer's case, and this again is in Wendell's stuff, they went and had certain type of chromographs made where they were able to enhance, and they show the original fit photo and they show the enhanced one where they were able to bring out the detail that showed you all of the dissimilar metals on the craft, that showed you the contours and the flanging and the machining. This is not done by somebody in their kitchen. The best stuff on these regular UFOs, disc-type things that Meyer did, Phil tried to duplicate the Hassenball one of the Hassenball. They're amateurish at best because you can't do it. There's no flashing lights to be seen on Langdon's film of the so-called Hassenball duplication. We shouldn't do too much, in my opinion. Let people read this evidence, because I'll tell you right now, and people sometimes criticize me for this, Alejandro, if you take all the UFO evidence out of the case, I can prove to you that Meyer is, as David Froning, astrophysicist, said, being advised by very knowledgeable people scientifically. And that means he's being advised by people who have access to information that nobody else on Earth does. Now, I know we're going to get to that segment.
We'll definitely get to that. We'll spend most of the last part on that. The issue is, of course, as you know, extraordinary claims take extraordinary evidence. It's something that we all face in this field, is that the bar is set higher for this field than it is even for scientific research. Scientists can go to the media and say, we think this and that. Later, it turns out to not be true. But it's different for this field. And just to highlight some of the issues, such as with the models again, Billy Meyer has said that even the alien, Sam Jase, has given him a model of a beam ship.
Right. Look, let me try to put this in perspective. I just said before, and I'll say it again, there are up to 12 different objects that Meyer photographed. In some cases, four in a photograph, and at different angles. We've got to get our heads straight here. Nobody else in ufology.
But that doesn't. Okay, so these pictures were difficult to make. They're able to be made with models. Billy Meyer has said, and I'm just being devil's advocate.
They've never been model photographs. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
To play devil's advocate, that Billy Meyer has said he's had models, not only models that he made, but models from an extraterrestrial that were given to him and then taken away. And these are pictures that could be made by models. And
that's not representing what's in the case. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Wendell Stevens, as you know, had a model made at the studio at MGM. Pretty decent model. Looked good. It wasn't made out of metal, but it was good. There's photographs of it. They photographed it, and when they did computer analysis, and this is where it comes down to it, you can talk about photographs and films all day long. No skeptic who's tried to duplicate Meyer's photographs or films has submitted their model photographs, because they will be coming back as models. They won't get an analysis such as was done.
Well, what about Langdon then? He never did. You never submitted.
He refuses to. He dodges it all the time.
They're online, though. I mean, you could do that yourself. And his craft looks exactly like Billy Meyer's.
Well, yes and no. I mean, again, this is where people have got to not be fooled by anybody's photographs on the basis of eye. If you don't know what you're looking for, you're going to miss it, because Phil does really nice models and good visual effects. I told him that, but I also helped him correct one of his films because he got it wrong, and I helped mm-hmm. him. I'll go through that in a minute, but let me direct you to something that I sent to you guys, and I have it up online now. I've got a page called The Special Evidence, and I lead it off with, more than a half dozen different photographs taken by other people from the 90s into 2000 of the Pleyaren beam ships, broad daylight and some at night.
Here's the problem with those.
Where you can tell from the photograph and from the blow-up, these are not – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. I know exactly what the problem with those is, that they are saucer-shaped objects that are often in the distance, but that's the most popular window. We have dozens and dozens of these types of pictures here in Wendell's collection, and – there's a lot of legitimate pictures out there all around the world of these type of objects.
I think you're jumping a little ahead here. After the ones taken by the different people who are connected to the Meyer case, and these are broad daylight objects in the distance hovering over mountains, they're clearly not little Phil Langdon models up close. And I mean, really, just take a look. Then we have a series of photographs taken by a Swiss skeptic. Five of those photos were taken at night and two of them in the daytime. They show the Pleiaren spacecraft. This is why I'm going to say to you, look, if you're going to talk about UFO photos at this stage of life for everybody, frankly, it's a dead end. We've got the best testing. They were analyzed.
You haven't proven the best testing. Not only that, that's an unnamed source. This skeptic is an unnamed person.
So what? Look, let me ask you.
So you
this
can't
question.
Use an unnamed source if you're talking about legitimate evidence
We have six other people whose names we know, and they took photos. But here's the question to you. I said I had some.
Okay.
Let's just say, just for the sake of discussion, that the testing that was done by the investigative team at their own expense showed that these were authentic. If the Meyer case is true, what will it mean to you? Just that's all. What if the case is true? What will it mean to you?
Well, to me, it would mean a lot. I mean, like I said, I've always wanted this case to be true. And for the most part, well, up until recently, I've held up, a stronger hope that it was true. But if it was true, it certainly doesn't mean to me the same things it would mean to you. In other words, what it would mean to me is that then this is a gentleman who did capture advanced technology on film and on pictures, and who believes he is in communication with these guys. And so then it would mean a closer look. He wouldn't be the first of these people. In fact, there are others whose evidence probably stands up a little stronger. For instance, Travis Walton. Many witnesses.
Travis?
In his case.
No, Travis Walton only has... Travis Walton has a handful of witnesses to some phenomenon. Billy Meyer has something close to 100 witnesses, 17 of whom have taken lie detector tests and who have witnessed multiple events, 5 to 7 of them who photographed the craft themselves. Now, really, the Travis Walton case, see, here's what I'm
The craft that you're talking about, if you're talking about those pictures you sent me, I mean, first of all, like you said, these weren't all people that were around Meyer, and the craft are similar to other craft taken by other people. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean they're the same people that Meyer. The one where
not.
You can tell it is the same craft is the anonymous source.
No, the other ones, if you look, they're very consistent with the shape of the beam ships, and I have witnesses, people that I know who have seen the ships come over the center in Switzerland as recently as a couple of years ago. I'm trying to explain something that's a little different. I asked you what would it mean to you, and you'd say, well,
okay,
then that he was taking photographs.
Right.
Okay, so you said it would mean that he was taking photographs of advanced technology and that he believed that he was in touch with people.
Yeah.
Now, this is where I have to start shaking the blanket out here. Belief in my world has no value. So what is the reason, if there are extraterrestrials, if there really are, why would they come? Is it to give us light shows? Is it to create activity for MUFON, which, pardon me, but to the best of my knowledge, has produced zero valuable evidence in 40 or 50 years? Or is it another reason? Could it be that there is a reason that advanced humans, or whatever you want to call them, have come light years from the depths of space to play a little hide-and-go-seek, to operate perhaps as maybe a term you would understand, a little bit like the trickster, who would not put everything on the plate for us. Instead, they would kind of force us to piece things together with our own experiences, with evidence, using our own intelligence, our own spirituality and intellect, to come up with these connections. And instead of forcing it on us and laying it out so that we have no choice but to believe, as you said, they're going to make us work for it, and they're going to make it difficult, not only for us, but probably for the guy who's got the task bringing it forward. So what would that really – see, when I asked you that question
– oh, no, that's great. This is where I wanted to get to, and we've gotten to here early. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Good, good. That's all right. See, here's the thing. Let's say this case was ongoing, which it is, and it was happening in St. Louis right now. Would you go there to check it out as a UFO investigator, a researcher?
This stuff is so difficult. You can't always do that. I mean, unfortunately,
well,
it's part of the difficulty. You know, we don't always have access. And that's what happens with MUFON a lot of the times.
Go ahead. I know, but I said if this was happening locally, relatively locally,
you could definitely
go there. Okay. So you probably would do the same thing if it was New York City, too. I mean, you know, here it's mm-hmm. not – and little stretch, if you had to get on a plane and you went to Switzerland, if this was really going on and going on today, wouldn't we think that the people who are most interested in this field and getting to the truth of it would find a way to go and look into this themselves?
But
well,
you touched
we can
upon
get off
it right. earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just like you've said, this is the hard part. If there's a little bit of this trickster in here where they're giving us pieces and parts, but they're not giving it all to us, that certainly would be something that's going on in this case. And you asked the question, why would someone come so far to do something like that? Now, I believe that that is sort of what's going on. But it's certainly, if the Billy Meier case is real, that would be what's going on. They give Billy Meier a model of a UFO, then they take it away. They give Billy Meier a laser gun that looks absolutely ridiculous, and I don't believe the laser gun at all. But let's say it's real. Let's say it's real. They give it to him, and then they take it away. They give him all of this stuff that would be evidence, and then they take it away. So they obviously would be acting, if they're real, like this trickster to get giving stuff and taking it away. So you couldn't blame. It's part of even their method. You couldn't blame other researchers for having doubts. And when you're talking about going to Switzerland and for these guys who have families and who have jobs to spend thousands of dollars to go out there and investigate when they have a host of other cases that they feel are legitimate, it's a lot to ask and too much.
Let me give you a response to that.
Okay.
First of all, as I said before, and I know we're going to get more strongly into it, it is actually very easy to know if the Meier case is true or not. And I said there's a reason for it, and we're coming to that. However, let's back up. With all due respect to any and everybody carrying on about UFO cases, I will say the following. It's Meier's opinion, and I happen to share it as someone who's had 6 UFO sightings myself. They are saying that the majority of this is simply terrestrial craft. There are no ET contacts going on. Oh, people get all excited when they hear that. They get angry. But they can't produce one piece of verifiable evidence that something is extraterrestrial and that there's a significance and a reason for it. Now, I will come to this about people spending thousands of dollars. I am a guy who's gotten by in life on a very, very modest level. I have paid for everything myself. They don't fly me to Switzerland. They don't put me up. They don't wine me and dine me. I find a way to do it because of one simple thing. If this is true, Alejandro, it's the most important story in human history. If it's not, it really is the best and just impenetrable hoax lasting seven decades. One man with one hand who has produced six categories of physical evidence we're still arguing about in 26,000 pages of information where the actual proof of the extraterrestrial contact lie. It is inescapable. It is what drives the skeptics nuts. It drives the skeptics so nuts that I have now had two occasions with an astronomer who has an online blog, a guy named Stuart Robbins, where he cannot respond. He refuses. He demanded evidence. I gave it to him, and he folded. Hundreds of posts going on. His friends and minions attacking me, there's no shortage of that, claiming all sorts of stuff, and yet we produce copyrighted, dated, published documentation that Billy Meyer published scientific information on some of the most important discoveries in this and the last century before they occurred. Now that has to sink in. Take all your UFO theories, take your sounds and your fishing lines and your sound, you know, and now forget it. This does not exist anywhere in ufology. And Open Minds is sitting on a lot of this. This ends the UFO field. I'm sorry. If what I'm telling you is true, if Meyer indeed published that there were two planets beyond Pluto to be discovered around the turn of the century, it was true. We documented it.
But it's not true that there are only two planets beyond Pluto.
He didn't say two. He said two would be discovered right around the turn of the century.
All he had to do was roll the dice that we would find at least two, quote-unquote, planets.
Did you roll
the dice?
Of
course. Well, I've rolled dice before.
Let me ask you, do you know any? But
people,
no.
But, especially
okay.
When it's your job.
Look,
I'm going to
come at you with this.
Okay,
Alejandro, wait. Skepticism is one thing. Your library with Wendell Stuff has a book. You've got I sent you those photos.
Yeah.
They're copyrighted, dated, published. Wendell speaks about that, Pluto information, and it's right there. Now, what's interesting about that isn't even the Pluto information. Those two discoveries, those specific two, happened right around the turn of the century. But what's interesting, he speaks about the 115th contact from October 19th, 1978. There's a whole bunch of predictions in there that Wendell saw, and he wasn't supposed to, and he's talking about it. He mentions Jupiter and some moons. Now, why is this important? And now I'm going to give you something that if you really think you can debunk this, you go ahead and take your shot. Here's the story. Billy Meyer, on October 19th, 1978, was apparently taken up close to see Jupiter and to confirm that it had rings. He saw that there was a moon called Io. He described it as being the most volcanically active body in the solar system. He said that the dust particles and the ejecta from the volcanoes not only fell back onto Io, but they comprised one of the rings of Jupiter. He said all sorts of detailed stuff about this. Now, on March 9th, you'll see it right on that page that you've got in that book. Mm-hmm. Wendell says, I had this information in my hands March 9th. Now, he doesn't even refer to Io. He never did. He never noticed it. But here's what happened 3 days later, Monday, March 12th, 1979. NASA makes an announcement. I don't know if you heard it. Did you hear that announcement? Probably not. And the announcement was the most important discovery of the Voyager mission is that Io is the most volcanically active body in the solar system.
And when
it was
it that that
later.
Information made it public that Billy Meier had said this?
No later than 3 days before. But Meier had already published it in 1978, October, when he published his and disseminated his mimeographed copies that did not include the predictions that he was not allowed to share, that Wendell got by accident, which may be in your possession, signed off by two other guys, one from the Flandreau Planetarium and another guy, Lieutenant Major in the Air Force. Now, follow closely. A skeptic tried to debunk this. And this last week, I put up a document, and I think you guys have it. You'll be able to run it up by the end of the show. People can go and see it. I shred every bit of debunking and show that the skeptic himself stated effectively the very thing he claimed he was debunking. He said there were never any, sulfur particles found in the rings of Jupiter. Well, that's not true. And he even quotes a place where they exist, and it drove me crazy to see it. So obviously, I put up a nice little clip. Now, just so you understand, in 1976, Meier published information on three discoveries that would be made on Mars that happened in, I think it was 2008. Mm-hmm. He published information on discoveries in Venus 1 year before the Russian probe got there and confirmed them. It goes on and on.
He published them in German
published.
On the FIGU website, because we never saw them. These weren't published here until like 2001. Not until like Moosburger's book and Wendell's, and these were years later.
No,
these were even after these events took place.
Well, no. I can give you some. I mean, I could do this all day long, but I've given you examples and something that's easy to check out. In 1987, Meier published something called the Henoch Prophecies. They're on my website. I put them up in 2002. You know, that is an easy record to find out. They've been
right
up there for years. They've been referred to on the internet. Okay. One of the odd little things that struck me about the Henoch prophecies, and there were many, was that Meier went and said, of all the crazy things, Russia, and they don't give dates, but he says, Russia will at a certain point invade Scandinavia, they will invade Iran and Turkey, and then ultimately come across Alaska and attack on the U.S. Russia will launch its attack from Arkhangelsk. I went, what the heck is an Arkhangelsk? I've never heard of it. Have you? Do you know what an Arkhangelsk is?
Nope.
Okay, good. We were in the same boat. Within the last two months, and I will give it to you as close to the date as I possibly can, the Russians announced something very interesting. They announced troop movements into Arkhangelsk. Oh, another coincidence, is it? They announced that in July, like 2 months ago, deploying two army brigades to Arkhangelsk. Okay. Now, what about the discovery of extraterrestrial DNA on meteorites that was just made recently? NASA announced it. Well, Meier had already published that in 1988. You know, perhaps, that in 1982, he describes touch screen technology in one of the spacecraft while he's being shown a planetary alignment. You know that he warned since the 50s about the atomic testing because it was going to damage the ozone in 1988, 2 years after
the
contact.
But this is the problem, and you have not demonstrated this well, if indeed these all were made prior to when they were discovered. Now, this Russian one,
of course,
that's something different, because all of these books that came out with these predictions are all after these events.
The
World Trade Center. That book came out, what, in 2001, 2002, saying that prediction many, many years earlier?
There are some things. If people say that we can't buy the World Trade Center thing, I say fine. But no, you're missing something. Just about all of this exists in German first and then in English. Those German books and publications, for instance, on my website, we have this very, very famous thing that I've stuck up there about the 5,100-year-old man. What's that? Well, Meyer was told in 1991 that there would be an Iceman mummy discovered in the Alps. And he was told about how this guy lived and everything else and how he died. He published it in his group members, 1991. And, of course, it was discovered later that year. But he did something else that you can see on my website, because we show the copyrighted, published, dated cover of the book it was in from 1996. Well, wait, that's 5 years later. Why would I talk about it? Because, Alejandro, in 2001, 10 years after Meyer claims he first got the information, 5 years after we know it's published, scientists bring the Iceman mummy into a hospital in Italy. Why? They want to find out what killed this guy. We've got CT scan now. We could probably figure it out. What did they find? Well, they found a fractured skull, and they found something else. They found an arrowhead in his back. Now, when you go to Meyer's 1996 book, when you go there, what do you think you find when Meyer asks, what killed this guy? What do you think you find? You find that he's told, well, this man fell down from a height. Okay, so what? How do you? And he landed on his back. Oh, he must have hit his head, and he landed, Alejandro, on an arrow. Now,
have you ever done any books on tape? You would be very good at doing
really?
Books on tape.
Thank you. I'll be glad to do it.
Here's what I'm saying. Fine, and I thought we would get to this, because the problem is it's impossible. It is nearly impossible to research these alleged predictions that come true from your website. Everything's so, and then when you get into most of the work that's been done on this case, it's so unorganized, it's so contradictory, that if you could demonstrate that and put that more succinctly on your site, I think you would, people would be much more convinced. And I guess what partially, and I'm telling you, I'm open-minded to these things that you're telling me right now. And I certainly wouldn't say, oh, that's a bunch of BS, because I don't know better. And I believe you. I'd like to see this better so I could. Otherwise, how can you expect these MUFON investigators to believe any of this? If it's organized
no
and put up well, and then when you have what is out there is a ray gun, the models that the aliens gave him and took away.
Can we come back to this thing about organized evidence? Just so you know, I have an article on my website. I have a whole page about corroborated evidence. Now, I organized that whole page just so good folks could go and look and find this stuff. It's called corroborated information. Now, I have an article there that's at the very top, and it's called Will Humanity Wake Up in Time? Alejandro, I have organized, if you will, that is, I've laundry listed something like 150 specific, separate, scientifically validated items that Meyer published first. I've linked to a guy's video. He even put it on video, so it's even easier for people to see. He shows the corroborated information. And I link to the reports. We link to a site where you can read the reports. And you guys have four books. And in the Wendell
Stevens
series,
I'm telling you, that's what I'm trying to tell you. None of these demonstrate evidence. You're corroborated.
No, I've gone through that.
You make a lot
of
claims, but you don't show any evidence for these things. And I'm not saying the evidence doesn't exist, but you certainly aren't demonstrating it by making these claims that Billy Meyer said this in 75, but it wasn't until 2001 that it came out in some book, but scientists talked about it in 1981. I mean, it's all over the place.
It isn't. I think you're missing something here, and I want to get through to you on this because it really is important, and your concern is important, or you wouldn't be driving on that. Look, I'm going to give it to you this simply, because you have, I guarantee, do you know in what contact Meyer was told about the A-bomb explosions being connected to the ozone testing? Do you know what that is?
I've read it a gajillion times. Let's see, it's contact 35.
And contact 7. Hey, I got to tell you something. Those are in Wendell Stevens' copyrighted, dated, published books. And here's how I knew the case was real in 1988. This
Which
is my
book
experience.
Didn't come out until after.
No. The content here, bear with me. I'm going to give it to you. The first thing that happened was that the contact reports in mimeograph form came out in the mid-1980s. Or around 1980. Wendell Stevens was working on getting these things translated by about 1978. Now, and I can, you know, if you want to get technical, I'll show you why this stuff was before his copyright dates, because we're in the days of books being typeset and taking years to do. Now, let's get to this point on the ozone damage. In 1986, I was in a little cafe in Sedona, and a guy named Ralph Amagron, who later changed his name to Alex Collier, told me to come up to Decker Canyon and get the 1,800 pages. I got them. Randy Sinners had them. I know four or five other people that still have the original pages. I read them all. I stuck them under the bed. And then one day, in 1988, I opened the newspaper, and I see that little thing, that article, A-bomb testing tied to ozone damage. I read it. I read the percentages that Lawrence Livermore Laboratories had published. I said, why do I know this already? I reached under the bed, and there, in the seventh contact, and as you say, in the 35th or whatever it is, there was the information. My head spun. But that was the beginning. Then when we went on to this ozone damage from the gases leading to genetic mutations and damaging the food chain in 1991. I went, wait a minute, why do I know that already? Of course, that was still back in the Meyer material in Wendell's books. Later, but in the contact reports as early, at least as 86 when I got them, which means they were circulating at least a few years earlier. What about this whole connection of earthquakes and volcanic activity tied to oil extraction and gas extraction? Well, when I read that one, I said, why do I know that? Well, that's back there in the, you know, it's in the same thing. It's in Meyer's contact from the 45th contact. But now I'm reading it in 1990. I read it first in 86. Nobody's going to tell me that this guy isn't onto something.
Well,
one last thing.
Okay.
I organized an article called Will Humanity Wake Up in Time? I put links to every single one of Meyer's translated contact reports, and there's stuff being translated to this day in verifiably, preemptively, previously published German, because more people own the darn German than the English, and because they numbered every sentence, there's no way Meyer could go back and redact. Your turn.
Okay, here's what I want to put this, not put it aside, but okay, to kind of encapsulate this, that the predictions, and not to say, you know, that I personally have a hard opinion either way, but at least I think I've expressed why I think people have a hard time, because it's difficult to substantiate, I feel, a lot
it's
of this.
It's very easy. I'm going to argue with you. It's easy to substantiate. If I can do it, a middle-aged folk singer from the 60s.
Who spent his life doing this on this, or no, he spent a lot of your life on this case.
Yeah, because it fascinated me, and I have to raise a kid and do other things and have all sorts of other experiences. But, you see, I did it so that others don't have to, unless they want to, walk through every step. They can go, and then they can try to find out by cross-referencing. Like when I ripped the skeptic apart on Io, that means that the case is real. I'm sorry, Alejandro.
But
there's
just
no
because
way
I stopped responding to you.
No. I documented his attempted debunking.
Right.
This is up there.
Okay, that's great. So let's even, for argument's sake, say, okay, you have something really great here when it comes to all of these predictions. And right. And I know there are a lot of them.
And one last thing, just before you get into your other point. I have my own personal evidence that the case is real, and I rarely talk about it. But go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, you got to talk about it now.
Okay. Well, I'll give you that in a nutshell. Cal Korf, who you mentioned in your last show, a couple quick things. Cal Korf was never a member of FIGU. He never met Billy Meyer. He skulked around the place in a disguise for reasons nobody can figure out, since it's not a compound with people, you know, with armed guards carrying on. He never. Look, he falsified Meyer's photos. How do I know that? The article's on my site. I met the man he hired to put the airbrushed lines in there, the guy that came up to me 2004 apologizing. I've got his name. He wrote the article, but here's my personal evidence. In 2009, Cal Korf approached me. We'd been, you know, battling back and forth with a lovely little thing. Why don't we do a project together? I, Cal Korf, will do the anti-Meyer thing very respectfully on a DVD, and you, Michael Horn, will do the pro. And you'll send it to me, and I'll package it up, and we'll put it out there. We'll agree to disagree. We won't be disagreeable. We'll be friends forever. His website suddenly had him walking hand in hand with me through the flowers. I said, sure. I don't hold grudges. Okay, you've been crazy in the past. I'm taking you at your word. We roll into November of 2009, and we're getting ready. He's got questions ready and all of this. I send an email to Switzerland. Hey, guys, as you know, I'm going to do a project with Cal Korf. Billy, is there anything you want one way or the other? He says, no, you do what you do. Okay. 2 days later, I get an emergency email from Switzerland, from Christian Frenner. Michael, hold. Don't move. Wait till tomorrow. You're getting a translation of a contact. Things are not as you see them. I said, what? Okay, now remember, I'm going hand in hand here with Cal Korf. Billy says, well, do what you want to do. I get a transcript. This is all on my website. People can read it. It's a matter of record on the email servers. Bottom line, Michael Horn does not know that what Cal Korf is planning, this comes through the so-called imaginary play art, is a tremendous attack on the case using him as a vehicle, using Michael Horn and this project as a vehicle to spread more disinformation, falsification, you name it. Michael has no way of knowing, but we would recommend that he stop. Okay, because time is short, I found a relatively gracious way to back out. Sorry, Cal, you never sent me a contract. I'm busy. Do what you want to do. 2 days after it was clear to Korf, his website had no less than 300 already prepared attacks against us and death threats. Now, you may have an idea of just what it takes, Alejandro, to get somebody to take something off the internet. I had 3 web hosting companies take down his site, 1 in the UK, 2 in the US. He finally got another guy to put it up, and he finally, only after he'd removed the death threats. How did the imaginary player know that this guy was loaded for bear? Oh, well, it's a coincidence and nobody's going to believe it. It's not Oregon. It's my experience, and I have the email with the transcript. I have all of I put Cal Korf's emails up. This was, we are walking through the flowers, and then he had all this stuff ready. He was going to put it on DVDs, and I was going to be out there promoting it.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, he is not a he doesn't play fair, and I totally understand that. And the only part, you know, out of to defense of our article is some of the things that were demonstrated, some of the things that are, you know, solid. We didn't take all of his word for this, that, and the other, because he has a lot to say about a lot of stuff, but that he certainly cannot substantiate. Claims that are quite dubious, but you know,
he can't really substantiate anything else. But look, I would say to you this, you know, Cal Korf, I gave you that because it's my experience. We have documentation. It's not, you know, it's not a story I wove. I've got the names of the web hosting companies. I said, oh my God, death threats? No thanks. We don't want the FBI here. I talked to these guys. You know, I was on phone internationally and email, and they were looking, and this stuff went up overnight. So I was being set up. Meyer didn't know. Look, here's what you have to look at. And I think as an investigator, honestly, preponderance of evidence, quality of evidence. And I'll say one more thing, and this will, I know this will offend everybody. There are no other worthwhile, verifiable UFO contact cases. And if anybody objects to that, I say you come and meet this criteria. And you can argue about whether you think there's models here or not, but you're going to then have to go through the photo analysis.
Okay,
you can
I'll
say fit light, you know. I mean, all this stuff, I just want to say this. Phil Langdon says, I duplicated the sounds on a fishing line. You think you could hear that 4 kilometers away? It's all the stuff that people don't know and that they won't admit and they won't say. And, yeah, I've spent almost 33 years. So if you say, well, it's too hard to find, I've organized it. I've got links everywhere. And I would be even glad
that's
if
links everywhere is disorganization. I mean, that's the issue. But regardless. I want to get to a couple of points.
Go ahead.
We're almost out of time. And you know, your points are well taken, and people will hear those and do what they will with those. But I wanted to get to two things because we're almost out of time. One is the abduction phenomena. There you have thousands, if not tens of thousands, of people experiencing this. Sure, you know, I would admit there isn't a whole lot of evidence there. I myself have seen what I believe to be incontrovertible evidence. However, it's just something I saw. It's not something I can document and prove, unfortunately. But still, there are many other researchers. But then what would you say about that? There's a case when there's more witnesses than the Billy Meyer.
No, I'll tell you this. There is not one piece of evidence that I have seen, including Roger Lear, anything else, that any reputable scientist will say we can prove this there's an extraterrestrial contact. What has happened, and this you'll find, this is one of the reasons Meyer has been targeted 22 times for death, this is largely secret military stuff. It's operations that are conducted by private groups and secret military to create fear, to set people up for false ET attacks and stuff. There is no reason. Think about it. There is no reason on earth. These phony ideas of, well, we let them abduct our people in exchange. Anybody that can float somebody through a wall, Alejandro, and put probes up their nostrils doesn't need our permission, doesn't need to sign agreements. They would do it surreptitiously. Have there been actual extraterrestrial abductions? I think there have been a handful. The rest of it is either secret military, hysteria, dream paralysis or stuff. And until people can say, I can demonstrate the extraterrestrial connection and I can prove why somebody has come 400 light years from space to take my DNA, my useless, worthless, short lifespan, corrupted, illness-laden, aggression.
Hey, that's mean.
DNA. Well, you know, look,
you're talking about your DNA too there, buddy.
You betcha. And I'm hoping that it gets improved in my next incarceration, if I have one. But, yeah. So I don't buy the abduction thing proving anything.
Now, what you build your case on there, though, is largely because of motive, and motive that you have a hard time dealing with. But, use that same ruler on this case. Okay, you've got a situation, and now I'm kind of run through the bad stuff that Billy Meyer's Pleiadians have done that haven't helped the case, and you can tell me if I'm off base here. Okay, so they've given him a model and then taken it away. They've given him
one model right, that we don't even know was ever appeared in any photograph where there's 12 different ones, but go ahead.
Okay. Then they gave him a ridiculous-looking laser gun that looks very similar to a plastic model.
Hold on. I'll do that one for you. I did a search online for toy guns. Now, does it look like a plastic model because of the red tip or something, or just the way it looks?
Well,
a little
it
funny?
Looks plastic, for one.
Okay.
Not only that, you sent me a picture of a model of a gun, and the red tip is exactly like the one.
Actually isn't. I used a magnifying glass, but it's close. And as I said on my website, do they have a sense of humor? Because here's the deal. The space gun, and you probably have got that photograph right there, and if you look at the rest of that gun, it's a piece of junk. Now, look at the gun in the Alina photographs, and here's a couple things, and you've got these photos.
Yeah.
It's pretty well machined, the whole rest of it. Why would you use a junk tip and go to the trouble to machine something, as you say, out of plastic? It could be metallic. Then you get not only that, you realize, first of all, red tips as an indicator of a toy, that's why this gun was an anomaly, as an indicator of a toy didn't occur until after the 90s. That particular gun was never found in Switzerland. They've never found a red-tipped gun in all those investigations. And lastly, perhaps, the holes made through the trees are oval. They are smooth as glass all the way through. They created a singe line for over 100 meters through the forest. This is all in the books that you guys own.
So, well, Wendell said he didn't say he did not believe there was any burning.
No, that's not true. He measured. He showed stuff.
I know,
stuff.
And he said there wasn't burning. It wasn't done by burning. He said that.
He said it wasn't done by using a torch or a welding thing. He said whatever went through here seared the interior of the tree to a glass smooth hardness, and that every branch that was burned all the way through in a straight line was burned all the way through in a straight line. I mean, I've got that on my website. You've got it in the books.
Great. No, that's great. Next. Because you're able to give us some information about that gun. But regardless, the main thing I'm getting back to anyway is just that they gave him this gun and then they took it away. The tree that the UFO was flying around, they somehow, and you can explain this because there's several people have done different things. Wendell said it was taken down. I believe that Billy Meyer actually said it had gotten radiation, so the extraterrestrials had taken it to another time. I'm not sure.
Let me answer that. That's true, and that's real problematic for people, but here's a beauty. There's a famous photograph called the sunlight photo with the tree, and I know you guys have that, and maybe you'll show that at the end of the show here or something.
Okay.
The sunlight photo, there's a couple of them where the ship is right, right by the tree. It's a barren branch tree. There's five other trees, parts of them around. Sunlight's glinting off of it. They photographed that tree in a full bloom season, and that's also in Wendell's photographs. And if you have trouble for this show to find it, we can find it. I'll get it for you. That tree was well over 40 feet tall. That tree was there for years and years. They photographed it. As a matter of fact, on my website, I've got, I think it's an article called The Final Proof. Meyer and the Japanese film director walk up a hill in a video clip to the tree. It's there. So this is, it's a model tree. That's why it disappeared. Huh. Funny story on two trees. I can't prove that,
but the tree did disappear.
Those other trees were gone. But the photographs, when you analyze, as Jim Deardorff did, you analyze the UFOs in the photograph, they are showing large models at a distance from the camera with close-up stuff in fuzzy focus because the distant focus is picking up the tree and the UFO. This is not stuff that's so easy to get around. This is not stuff that any of these cases alleged.
I'm not questioning the picture. I'm questioning the motive. Because then we've got we've got the aliens after they already supposedly knew this for several years, and I guess Billy Meyer said they told him, but he forgot, letting Billy Meyer pass out all of these UFO photos, which a lot of them later he says were men in black, that they were switched out.
Let me go for that, and let me go for that by way also of the Ascot photos.
Exactly, photos.
Okay, except for something. And again, this is up, easy to find. All you have to do, they fly, ask it in there, it's there. And on my corroborated information page, believe me, if anybody has a problem with it, I will send stuff, my own time and expense. Here's the answer. I read, and you have it in your books, in 1975, Meyer is told that there are two doubles in America who look like Ascot and Nera. He says, well, great, let me go see him. And all of a sudden, they said, no, we really can't do that. He says, why? They said, well, we can't talk about it. 23 years later, the Ascot and Nera photos show up. Well, what's the next problem with that, apart from the fact that Meyer was told about it? When they say he photographed it off the screen, because Meyer got his first TV set, I think it was a year or two after he took the original Ascot-Nira photos, and when you look at them and you compare it side by side, it doesn't have the color dots from the cathode ray tube. And the Dean Martin one of the different-looking woman does. These are the devils in the details. So this the Ascot-Nira, the Dean Martin, you know, everybody wants to say that. No, go and look at it. Check out those. He didn't take those photographs off of the TV set, or those dots would be there.
You've got to understand how people would have a hard time swallowing that there's doubles of these aliens on Earth that happened to work for Dean Martin, and then Billy Meier, they told him in 1975, but he doesn't tell anybody until the pictures come out.
No, that's not so. They were published. That was published in Wendell's first book, and it was in the contact reports that I got in 86. That's already 12 years before anybody brings it up. Alejandro, work with me here, as they say.
Well, and that's not even the point. You get to bring this up. That's great you brought this up. My point is this, that you have the aliens giving the gun, taking it away, giving the model, taking it away. You have them, letting Billy Meier pass out these pictures that were supposedly, you know, switched out by Men in Black. Then you have all of these predictions that you've gone through before. And for argument's sake, let's say this is all real. But these predictions aren't being given to the general public. They're given to one guy in Germany. And a lot of these predictions have to do with English-speaking people. Why would they do that? What is the motivation then for these guys to come from as far as they do? I mean, using motivation as a problem with abduction, that you can find more motivations for abduction than you can for this stuff.
No, I love the essence of your questions at the end, because, look, scientifically, and look, please, I've spent time with David Froning, who's an astrophysicist. I knew, of course, Wendell, Lee, and Britt. I've talked to people who are investigators of all sorts. I like the detective mind. The idea of why they took away things is secondary to whether they were real or not. But let's go to your question. Why did they do this? Why did they give it to this guy? And it isn't all about English, you know, people in the West. So much of this information has to do with Israel, Russia, China, Scandinavia, Europe, the Middle East. Could it be more international? Even touches on Pakistan and India.
Well, then why aren't they giving it to people in these countries too? That's what I'm saying. They give it to this Swedish guy in the mountains. And nobody else is getting this supposed information that we need in order to help ourselves survive.
Let me be brutal with you here. Look at it, and let me be honest, because this is our process, Alejandro, and it's one we can respect, and I'm not attacking you, and I'm not actually attacking anybody else. Let's just for a moment look at it this way. Let's say that they did give this to one guy who was tasked with the seemingly impossible, insurmountable task of making it available to the world. And they said, this will be your job. Look at how he is received. Oh, well, why don't they give it to these scientists? I put the information up on scientists' blogs. I send it out to Phil Plait. I send it out to Tyson deGrasse, Neil deGrasse. I send it out to Michael Shermer. I send it out to Bernard Haitch. I send it out to SETI. I send it out to UNESCO. They won't touch it. Well, why didn't he make the contacts with them? These people could not handle it. Their paradigms would be shattered. You don't understand. It's hard enough. People try to kill the messenger. Whether we like it or not, if this is true, and this is going to be for each and every individual to determine, neither you nor I can decide this for other people. I will go to great lengths to make it accessible, but each person has to think it through themselves, and I'm going to come to the answer. Here it is. It was done this way so that it would get disseminated. This stuff is now in Spanish, Russian, Italian. People are translating it to Czech and Polish. You don't know quite what's going on. People in these countries are hungry. I get emails from people in India, in Sri Lanka. I've had 138 different countries be the source of inquiries to me. This stuff is finding its way, but it had to be worked for by the people just for that kind of a thing that you, and you know I was paraphrasing you when I said that people have to be forced to piece things together. We have to do it. We may disagree with the methodology. Well, why didn't they do it this way? Why didn't they? it was done this way based on their best assessment as being quite removed from us of how to approach us without disrupting us, without creating new gods, without creating wars, suicides, and psychosis. Here's the stuff that we really want you to have. If you will do your due diligence, and here's your payoff, Alejandro. If you will do your due diligence, human beings of Earth, and you will see and struggle through that we've given this man all of this vitally important stuff, such as the red meteor warning that this thing is going to hit in Eastern Europe on either 2029 or 2036, and you've got to deflect it. Don't blow it up. We're telling you specifically it's coming. You must deflect it with a nuclear device. I put up a comic strip about it. We are trying to help you assure your future survival because you are going downhill. And what is coming your way environmentally, which you have set up for decades, human beings of Earth, is going to be overwhelming. And with your new Fukushima and your BP, which have now gone away from your current attention focus, these are going to poison your food chain and pollute your planet. You forget about solar power and wind. You want answers? We are telling you, get about the business of working with deep geothermal. It is accessible. You will have far less difficulties going through your growing pains. And now people in Switzerland and Austria and others are starting on this because it is inexhaustible. There's no toxicity. You are too overpopulated to satisfy all of your needs with solar or wind or hydroelectric. Get geothermal. You will not run out of it for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. You need to create a true international global justice system to handle these terrorists and wars. We have many things to offer you, but you have to first go through the painful process of realizing, yes, this information is real, it's accurate, it's prophetically accurate, so you will trust just enough to look at the rest, not to blindly believe it, but to consider our gift to you, to help you to help yourselves, not to be abducted. We don't want your DNA. We don't want to make babies with you. We want to help you to help you to preserve yourselves, because there are certain things coming that you will not be able to avoid, and you need as much help as you can get. And there it is.
All right. Well, we are out of time. I want to thank you for coming. I hope, you know, thanks for being a sport and everything. One thing,
anytime.
It's great that you are so open. And, you know, you sent us these pictures that I think some people, including, you know, people here, we look at some of these and we're like, well, this does not help his case. It hurts the case. But, you know, you're open to try to share everything that's out there, which is great. And hopefully we were able to organize the show because there's so much here. It's hard to organize this stuff. And I feel the pain that way. But theyfly.com, right, is the website?
Yes. And, you know, special evidence page, a corroborated information page, press releases, it's all there. And anybody that doesn't find something I've referred to and wants it or wants to challenge it, time permitting, I respond to everybody. I'll be a little out of town for a couple weeks. You know, I'll be in Switzerland and London and Paris and stuff like that. But I do get back. And because you have been so damn gracious, and you've done this in a way that I frankly did not expect, honestly. But I, you know, look, you and I had met before, and you've always been just a warm and open, you know, clear guy. I thank you. I'm available to do more on any of these if you want. I know there's a lot here.
And yeah, we can talk forever on this. I know.
Could. And bottom line, there's the message. They want us to try to look and help ourselves out of some rough stuff coming. And that's it. That's my – I try to prove the prophecies wrong. That's
and there's
mission.
no doubt we got rough stuff coming, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you again. Anytime.
All right. Thank you so much. I hope your voice gets better. Hopefully we didn't mess it up too much.
Not at all.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Horn. And theyfly.com is where you can find the information he is referring to. Although when you go to that page that he says, there's not even links. It's just lists of the supposed claims, and it would be great to be able to get some more information there. Maybe he will in the future, Billy Meyer, real or not, it is up to you, the listener. Thank you so much for listening yet again to Open Minds Radio. Remember, you can get all of this information, all of the stories that we talked about at openminds.tv, Ustream, or on YouTube in a couple days. You'll be able to watch the video and see some of the pictures that we talked about. Everything he sent us, we put in that video. So he is very gracious and very helpful in sending us a lot of pictures. A nice guy, Mr. Horn. Anyway, thanks for joining us. Don't forget to join us next week. Talk to you later.